Welcome once again to the CandidCast. Today, we are continuing our discussion with Nigerians who moved from zero to hero to tell us their story, how they emerged, and how they can guide upcoming Nigerians to attain to their full potential. God did not design any of us to fail. And what happened in their life can also happen in the life of any of us. So join me in welcoming once again the founder of Lapo Microfinance, the largest microfinance group in Nigeria. It's the oldest microfinance. And actually, sometimes you hear people, stories that happen in microfinance, the way we used to call newspaper Daily Times, and we used to call every cocoa beverage Bonvita. That's how people call microfinance organizations Lapo. The first time I heard of it was, they say somebody is a Yoruba, say you say what otimlogba owo Lapo. So meaning the person has gone to borrow from a microfinance bank. So that's how much it is a household name.
Yeah.
And what people, the founder is Dr. Godwin Ehigamusa. It's a privilege to have you in our studio today.
Yeah, welcome, sir. Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
So it's a privilege for us to have you guide Nigerians on your life journey, because
yes,
it's a very inspirational journey. Like you were a civil servant. When, how you moved from civil service, because a lot of people get late. Civil service is a place where I determined by myself from the university that I was never going to taste.
Yes.
Because it makes people laid back. And you move from there to become a foremost entrepreneur in Nigeria. How did this happen?
Well, the transition, I can say, was quite smooth, and I will explain this. The tendency to see civil servant as a bit laid back is the fact that there are procedures that tend to follow the rules and all that. And to a large extent, it's not a negative thing. It's bad. It's good. Bureaucracy is to set things right. But for me personally, I deliberately walk into the civil service. The reason was that while I was in university, I also did a vacation job in the cooperative department.
Okay.
And when I got there, I realized very quickly that cooperative movement is essentially a poverty or development movement. I will also equally explain this. One definition of cooperative society is that a cooperative society is an economic association of persons with limited means, or the limited means, who pool their resources together through savings, contribution. And from that pool, individuals can draw on to meet their needs. And for me, that resonated well with me, given my ideological clarity that development is about the development of the ordinary people. And so I decided to choose to be in the cooperative department rather than, being an administrative officer. And eventually, I went for a postgraduate study in cooperative enterprise management and supervision. But when eventually I was posted to Ogwashuku, then under Bende, very early I was disillusioned. That came from the fact that the way cooperative was practiced was significantly different from what I thought cooperative should be, because of the fact that there was so much the issue of over-officialization with the public civil servants who were in the department given enormous power by the cooperative laws and regulation. And that's stifled the initiative of the members. The members obviously never saw cooperative society as their own organization. And so that for me was... And what that led to was the fact that the cooperative movement and the society that constitute the movement start underperforming, and I got disillusioned. So the question I therefore asked myself, what could be a non-governmental approached to do what the cooperative are doing. And that was how Lift Above Poverty Organization came in. Okay. And so, why was the transition smooth? It was because my engagement in the corporate society within the civil service structure was about providing service. It was not about money making. And so, the early days of LAPO, therefore, was also about service. It was not about financial return. And so that transition was. But as the organization get complicated, building relationship and partnership with other people, local and international, we needed to adopt some fine best practices in business management. And of course, you begin to also look at the whole issue of sustainability. And when you consider the issue of sustainability, financial sustainability becomes extremely important. So that transition was smooth for me.
Thank you very much. When you made your adventure into the private sector,
yes,
I see a lot of sacrifice that you put in. Like I read where you had to go from Ogwachukwu to Abu, either to receive a phone call or to make a call to book an appointment for somebody coming from Lagos. That is quite instructive. How does that speak to the level of patience you see with people, the patience, the determination, the doggedness? Do you still see it around today in Nigeria?
Yeah, the tendency is for us to see that you do not have that. But if you look below the social media space, all the Rasmatas things, you will think that there. But I can tell you, there are young Nigerians who have put their hands on the plow, on certain projects that so focused, so committed to see how they will bring it to pass. Because for every generation, you will have people like that. I look around. I was teaching in a high school in Lagos in the 80s, and I look around and say, hey, where are those people who were the great people we mentioned those days? And those guys that are rolling the economy space today, where were they in the early 80s? Obviously not. So the guys, the people, young men and women that will roll the economy space in 2030s and 40 are in their own corner at this moment, working assiduously, you know, paying the price, and eventually they will emerge. So I do not think, take away all the noise that we hear and look deep into the structure of the society and you see young people doing wonderful things and doing it silently and diligently.
Thank you. That's quite encouraging. Particularly for our youths, that those who will rule in the next 10, 20 years are in their various corner, doing what they should do. So don't be left out, don't be an idle person. So that takes me to the next question is, your business was founded to promote the culture of growing your wealth through borrowing. Mm. You want to use borrowing to remove people from poverty.
Yes.
And you were in the church where the central teaching was the borrower is a slave to the lender. Mm. You shall lend, you shall not borrow. And so many things that they were reciting for us at that time. And the African culture is also opposed to borrowing. Mm-hmm. How did the church receive you as a rebel, as somebody who was rebellious to doctrine? Or how were you received in the church?
I think there was no pushback. There was nothing from the Christian community, at least the one I belonged to at that time. This could be for some reasons. The first is the fact that we were actually doing what we call poverty lending. If you like, you can call it development lending. Lending where we provide loan credit facility for their businesses. So we are lending to them to do their business. And when you do that, you're actually helping them to create wealth. We used to say that our objective was to ensure that they are free from the grip of poverty, the slavery of poverty. And so we were enabling them, and we saw the impact. And so give people, poor person money, invest it in their business, the returns gets to the person. All things being equal, it helps to change the condition of members of his or her household. So for us, that was not the issue. I think the second thing is this. In our environment, people tend to look at borrowing as indebtedness. We try to explain that. Your loan has not become a debt, and therefore you are not a debtor until you default. And so what we therefore advise people, and very early we concentrated on this, that do not borrow for consumption. But if you borrow for investment in your business, you are actually trying to walk your way out of poverty.
Thank you very much, sir. That's very instructive. And I see that you have devoted your life to fighting poverty.
Yeah.
Most people that are wired this way came out of the pain of their background.
Yeah.
But you did not pass through that level of pain. You mentioned even in the school when they tell people, bring money to pay for something, and other people are waiting for month end. Mm. You were not among those waiting for month end. You had uncle who did. So why are you so drawn to the poor?
Okay. There is the tendency for people to think that my lifelong engagement in poverty alleviation could be a reflection of my background. And that is not true. One additional reason to what I was telling you is that my father completed a story building 3 months before I was born. So if you have that background, in spite of the generalized level of poverty in our own environment, I never really experienced that. The question people therefore ask, as you have asked, how do you therefore get involved?
Yeah.
I locate this in the fact that in primary five, my primary class teacher, Mr. Bernard Osage, introduced us to reading newspaper. He would ask us to contribute pence, and then we buy Nigerian Observer only one day of the week, that is Wednesday, that has the children page. So we read. By the time I got to the secondary school, I was almost addicted to reading newspaper. And what that did to me was the fact that I became so much aware of the happenings in Nigeria. I became aware of people talking about the burden of poverty. Prominent Nigerians like Tayshaun Lahri, you read about their columns. Others talking. Even in our local environment in Benin City, you have Mr. Eyare, who were writing, and I was reading that. And that, in a way, influenced my perception about this in Nigeria, about the condition of living of the poor people. So like I said, before, by the time in 1977, when I got to university, I was sufficiently aware of this. And that ensured that I joined a student movement that was organizing symposia, workshop on how do you improve the condition of the poor people or the masses. And so by the time, like I said, I left university, I knew exactly what I wanted to do. And that was to have a lifetime commitment to addressing the challenges of poverty.
Thank you so much, sir. Let me give this one final question before we leave this for today. Don't you think this mindset would have made more impact if you put it in the political space, like going to run for governorship of your state?
No, I think that would be constraining. And I can also confess that I had, over the years, a lot of pressure, you know, for you to say, okay, why can't you be into the political space? Mm-hmm. But I have always had one response, and that response is this, that if politics is about doing good for the people, I think my engagement in poverty alleviation through the instrumentality of Lift Above Poverty Organization, LAPO, is already doing that.
Thank you. I've heard a lot of testimonies, like the taxi driver that picked me when I went to Benin said he lost his parents very early. Mm. He was able to, through LAPO, buy a vehicle which he's using as commercial vehicle. And he has trained all his younger ones. They have all graduated.
Exactly.
So he's the only one that is driving. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Every other person is a graduate through that effort.
Yeah.
There are several testimonies.
Of course. Over the years, they have been. And at times, some of them could be moving. Yeah. I remember I was a chairman of a wedding reception. Mm. And towards the end of the wedding, a woman came to me. She put her mouth to my ear and said, "You lifted me out of the pit." And I look at her, and she thought that I was thinking she was my sister. And she quickly added, "I'm not your sister. I'm a LAPO woman." And tears came out of my eye.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Keep up with the good work. And this is where we draw the curtain today on our second episode of Zero to Hero series. Until we come your way again, stay tuned, please subscribe to the CandidCast, and do share this video to reach more people. God bless you.
Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for more exciting episodes ahead.
We appreciate your support and can't wait to share more insights with you soon.